This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Neil Mitchell from 3AW. What are you listening to? Well, you should know. You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
There you go. I'm Macca. My co-host is Madeline. Paul is on panel. Our special guest in the studio this morning is Jess Wilson, the member for Q.
Good morning. Welcome,
Jess. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Very well, thank you. And I must say, the discussion about musicals, I have to confess, I am a huge Sound of Music fan.
Oh, that's good.
And
very welcome then.
My nickname at school was Fraulein because I dressed up as Maria at a year 7 birthday party. And from that moment on, I was known as Fraulein. And I recently had framed a signed Julie Andrews picture of her on the hills.
Oh, wow.
Which has had huge engagement on my social media, which probably surprises no one.
I did meet Julie Andrews once.
Stop.
In a meet and greet when she came here.
Yeah?
It was a very exciting moment.
You know, you've got a fellow traveller amongst female politicians. Sally Capp is a huge Sound of Music fan. In fact, we call her Sally Von Capp. Sally has actually launched into just a couple of bars of some Sound of Music when she's been in here,
Hurry on talking, I'll leave it as a
yeah,
thing for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, Sally Von Capp. Anyway, so Jess, tell us about yourself. You're elected at the last state election for the seat of Q, previously held by, what was his name? I've expunged it. Tim Smith. Sorry. And Q is a very interesting electorate. But first, tell us your story, Jess. Why did you decide to enter Parliament?
So I've been in the Parliament now about 11 months, yep. And it's been an amazing 11 months. But prior to that, I grew up locally. I've lived in the area my entire life. I grew up with my parents and my little sister in Montelbert. I went to Montelbert Primary and then was lucky enough to go to Strathcona after that. And as a little girl, I was, as well as being a Sound of Music tragic, I was actually a Blue Heelers tragic. So I always thought I wanted to be a police officer. And then I thought I wanted to be a doctor, and I spent a week of work experience in a hospital and realised within about 20 minutes that I didn't like blood nor germs. So that was the end of that. So at the end of school, I decided that I'd go to Monash University. I studied law. And when I was there, I had the opportunity to go to London on an exchange and spent some time studying over there, but also doing a internship at the Palace of Westminster, the Parliament over there with an MP in the lower house, which was fascinating to see. And I'd always had an interest in politics. My dad was a member of Parliament in the Victorian Parliament, the member for Bennettswood, which is sort of the Mount Waverley area now. And so I'd always had that sort of political experience growing up. And my dad probably would say he never wanted me to run, because it's obviously politics comes with a lot of stress. It can be a very difficult job in many ways, but it's also very, very rewarding. And, you know, he was right behind me, him and Mum and my sister Sarah, during the campaign. But when I sort of finished uni, I went to KPMG and did a few years there, and then had the opportunity to work for Josh Frydenberg when he was energy minister. And that was during the time of sort of, I suppose, the energy wars in Canberra. And it was fascinating to be sort of inside government during that time, working on the policy detail, working with so many different stakeholders across what was such a big issue and such an important issue. And from there, I went to the Business Council of Australia, and the Business Council, the BCA, represents Australia's largest employers, about 150 companies, all household names, and works on policy development to strengthen the economy. And I got to work on energy policy from the flip side, from being the stakeholder, and work with major companies around putting in place greater certainty to drive that investment, particularly in clean technology. So it was a fascinating role. And while I was at the BCA, I sort of moved up the ranks there and ended up as sort of the 2IC and Executive Director for Policy right across the board and strategy. And I got to work across tax and infrastructure. And it was a job that really did blend both policy development, advocacy and politics. And I absolutely loved it. But then the opportunity came up for the seat of Q, and I decided I'd put my hand up. And in a pre-selection, you never know what the outcome will be. You never know if you'll be successful. But I sort of had that view that if you don't give it a go. If you don't try, then you'll never know. And I'd actually spent some time with the party. I'd been a member since I was 19, looking at why we don't have more women putting up their hands. And one of the reasons is women sort of think about it, but at the end of the day, they don't always put up their hand. So I thought that I, put forward this report about this very issue, and I had to then follow through and put my hand up. And, you know, you speak to hundreds of preselectors about sort of what you see as the issues locally and how you can be the best person to represent that and represent the people. And I was lucky enough to be preselected. And that led into a 12-month campaign for the seat of Q. And it was an amazing experience. Every weekend, every day, out and about talking to people. And I set myself a very simple goal at the outset, to meet as many people as possible and to talk to as many people as possible. And I think a core part of that I sort of was really focused on was, how do I listen to people and understand what their concerns are and what their issues are? And the best way to do that was to go door knocking. And so myself and my team, we door knocked over 16,000 doors over the course of that 12 months. And it was just such a sort of fascinating experience to go door to door and hear from people about the different issues. And of course, there's apprehension in that, because you sort of go to the door, you knock, you take a deep breath, because you just don't know
how they're going to greet you.
Exactly, or how that conversation is going to go. But 9.9 times out of 10, it was sort of a surprise, to be honest, that someone was there asking them what their concerns were or how I could help them. And then the conversation flowed from there. And you're not always going to agree on every single issue, but the ability to have the conversation and to respect each other made such a difference throughout that time. And it allowed me to formulate a really localized campaign and a campaign around the issues that I know were resonating in the electorate. And then on the 26th of November, I was lucky enough to be elected as the member for Q, and we are where we are.
So as a new member of Parliament, what did you expect? It is a bit of a circus, isn't it? Like it's there's a lot of performance art, I'll call it that.
The Parliament is, so having had some time working in the federal Parliament, right, I think coming in with that gave me a good grounding and a good understanding of how the Parliament operates. There are so many new members that came in at the last election. Yeah. I think there were about 35 of us in my sort of cohort, the class of 2022. And that, I think, has made a really big difference to the Parliament, because there are so many people experiencing it from the first time. And I was lucky to come in with some wonderful colleagues on my side of the house, Evan Mulholland, Sam Groth, and then some great National Party MPs around Jade Benham and Annabelle Cleland. But also, I think what's lost in sort of the media portrayal of Parliament is that you also have relationships across the aisle.
You do, yeah.
And particularly with the new members, we've all come in together. And while there's theatre in Parliament and the media likes to carry a 10-second clip of something exciting happening in question time, Parliament sits for 8-9 hours of the day and you're debating legislation and you're having conversations across the aisle, you're walking out together. And I think that's something that's really, really important, is how do we build those relationships and how do we, work on issues where we can together, because most of the legislation that goes through the Parliament does have broad support.
Yeah,
we might disagree on certain ways to get there or on sort of the approach, but largely the outcomes that we want to see are broadly the same. And most people who go into Parliament do want to be there to see an outcome achieved. So it has been a fascinating time. Obviously, this week was fascinating because we had a new Premier.
Yes.
And that certainly changed the dynamics in the Parliament. I have to say it felt very chaotic. And the sort of the change there shows, I think, the command that the former Premier Andrews had over the party and the Parliament. And it was just a very different feeling this week. And that in many ways is, is something that we're going to be very focused on. But it also, I think, reflects on a period where it was a very centralised government and there's a lot of up in the air now.
Can I ask, what was your relationship like with the now Premier before her move?
Premier Allen? Funny enough, Premier Allen actually served in the Parliament with my dad. So she's been there for about 25 years, I think, and they had a small crossover. And I think she's got that with one or two MPs. Look, always polite, haven't had a lot to do with each other. Of course, you know, anyone would congratulate her on her elevation to the role of Premier. But I think what our broader concerns are as a team is how is her leadership going to be any different to what was there before? And this week showed that there's been very, very little difference to date.
When we come back, Jess, we're going to touch on your portfolio areas. And one of them, yes, I know you've only had it for less than a week, which is education. But early childhood, education, finance, economic reform and regulation. So, you know, there's a mix of let's say, technical and social policy there, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting to explore. You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, with Macca and Madeline. Our special guest is Jess Wilson, the member for Q. Stay with us.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is John Pesutto, Victoria's opposition leader. You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
There you are. What an intro.
The boss.
The boss. I'm Macca. Madeline Swain is my co-host. Our special guest is Jess Wilson, the member for Q. And Jess has quite a few shadow portfolio responsibilities. Early childhood, education, finance, economic reform and regulation. Jess, we might start with early childhood and education because they sort of, they cross over, don't they?
They do.
Tell us, early childhood particularly, what are your thoughts there? What's, you know, tell us something that you'd really like to see change or happen in early childhood policy.
So I think what we've seen globally is a rise in the understanding of the importance of early childhood learning and making sure that our young children are getting education at that early stage in life, and particularly sort of at that kinder level and then what we're calling pre-prep now. The government has rolled out what they call a free kinder program, mm-hmm. And that looking at providing three-year-old kinder and then turning four-year-old kinder into what they're going to call pre-prep. I've got concerns around the rollout of that program and the impact of rolling it out very, very quickly on particularly local kindergartens.
Okay.
So sessional kindergartens, which are the kindergartens that everyone probably knows, they're parent-run committees.
Yeah.
And they're struggling to keep up with the requirements of what that program is going to require of them around because of the number of hours required, the space that then they can offer in different classrooms. So I really think that working with the government to ensure that that program can be rolled out in a way that makes sure they're appropriately resourced at the same time will ensure that we're able to keep those kindergartens open. I wouldn't want to see a situation where we lose those sessional kindergartens. And we're already seeing some councils, I know Knox City Council have said that they're going to have to close some of their kindergartens because they simply cannot keep up with the rollout pace. So it's going to have to look at how we can work with them. And one of the issues is the sort of the term free kinder is a bit of a misnomer because it's a $2,500 subsidy, if you like, per child, but that doesn't necessarily meet the costs of the kindergarten, and particularly some of these kinders that have very experienced staff, they have programs in place, and the expectations of the families and the of the parents is that they will be able to provide those programs, but they won't be able to provide them at that $2,500 per child, and there's no ability to charge a gap fee. And it's
so the choice is often either we do it and we get this $2,500 or we can't do it.
That's right.
Right.
So you have to opt in or opt out.
Okay.
So it's a very black and white sort of system. And so I think that working there to sort of look at the nuances and how we can make sure we do preserve those wonderful community run centres. Mm. I mean, I was lucky enough to go to one of them. I still have lovely memories from that time. And I've been lucky to visit many in my own electorate. And we just wouldn't want to see them lost. And parents give up so much time to sit on those committees. They take on a lot of responsibility as well. They have to work through the staff. staffing. They have to work through the resources. They have to be responsible for the running of the kinder. And I just wouldn't want to see them lost in what I think is a important rollout of making sure all children can access early childhood education, but not sort of seeing the loss of sessional kinder. And the other important part of this is how do we make sure we're expanding childcare options into the regional Victoria? I hear from my National Party colleagues in particular that they're basically childcare deserts and there's not an ability to find childcare in parts of regional Victoria. And, of course, that has a huge impact on particularly women being able to get back into the workforce and driving down female participation in the workforce. And a lot of the reforms that have taken place in childcare in particular over recent years, and when I was at the BCA, worked quite closely on some of them, is to drive that increase of female participation in the workforce. And we wouldn't want to see that slip backward because there's not actually anywhere to send your kids for childcare.
We've still got a few minutes left. I wanted to so finance and economic reform and regulation. It's obvious to everyone that the financial environment governments worldwide are operating in, and Victoria, of course, is part of this, is debt and finance and how you pay for the services that we all expect.
Yep.
An argument's often made when people talk or when politicians talk about taxes. Oh, well, you know, if we don't do this, then we're going to have to cut back usually on hospitals, mm-hmm. police, schools.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the only thing government spends money on. Yep. So in the finance component of your portfolio, do you see where are the areas that you think the government can do better in the finance portfolio? And please don't say, you know, schools, hospitals and police.
No, I think what you're sort of talking about, Macca, is where can we find efficiencies in the system? And where I think we can find a lot of efficiencies in the system is in infrastructure.
Yeah.
So the government has rolled out a massive infrastructure program. As we know, the big build, you know, you look at the Metro Tunnel or the North East Link or sort of the suburban rail loop, which is on the cusp of starting. These are huge investments from the government. And from the projects that are currently underway, we've seen more than $30 billion in blowouts in project costs. Now, I contrast that to looking at the residential construction sector, and the residential construction sector has to basically work to fixed price contracting. And we've seen the fact that many of these residential constructors like Port of Davis have collapsed in recent years because they haven't been able to keep costs into that fixed price contracting. Yeah. The government doesn't have that same constraints. The government can keep spending and spending and spending. But unfortunately, they're spending Victorian taxpayers' money. And the result of that is taxes have to keep increasing to keep up with that. And just yesterday, we saw the financial report released and we saw that the income or the tax revenue from the last financial year grow substantially than what was expected in the budget, but we're actually seeing our deficit in Victoria deepening. Right. So our tax revenue actually isn't covering our costs.
Right.
And that, as you know, is a very big problem and something that we have to look at. And efficiencies in the system are going to be critical to that. And also making sure that we are growing our economy. If we can grow our economy, we can get more businesses investing, then we'll actually be able to ensure that we can look at bringing back those taxes whilst keeping up with expenditure.
We've got a message from a listener here, and he thinks that you didn't get it right on early childhood.
Right.
I'm not sure where the listener thought you were wrong. Perhaps that listener might like to tell us what it was you got wrong. While we wait for that, Madeline.
Well, a week today, of course, there's quite an important thing happening in the country. What are your thoughts on The Voice?
So I've said many months ago now that I was minded to support A Voice to Parliament and, of course, support constitutional recognition in the Constitution. I think it's been a really tough time over recent months around this debate, and I've been really disappointed from the perspective of the Albanese government in its inability to provide more information on this issue. More information on The Voice. And, you know, to the extent that people have been calling for greater detail, but also looking at providing draft legislation so that people can actually understand what the structure of this will be. And I really fear that the consequence of this will be next weekend when we wake up on Sunday morning is the referendum will have failed. And not only will the voice not be implemented, but we'll also see the fact that constitutional recognition will not be in place in Australia. And I think Australians resoundingly support that. So I'm really disappointed in how it's been run from the Albanese government's perspective, and the fact that there were options. There were options to split the questions. There was an option to have a question on Indigenous recognition and an option to have a question on the voice. And because we haven't gone down that track, we're actually not seeing the fact that this is, at this point, looking like it will succeed next weekend.
Jess, can I... With your support being, for the voice, being at odds with most of your party, has that caused you any issues in your party?
No, so at a state level, we have a what we call a sort of a free vote on this, and that's because this is a federal issue. This isn't a state issue. There's no legislation before the state parliament, and so my colleagues have each taken their own view, and I completely respect that because this is very much a personal decision, and one that I hope everyone comes at a way that is respectful. And when we come to matters of constitutional change, we do want to see robust debate. It is an important debate to have. We just want to make sure that that's respectful. But there are Liberals right across the country, and there are people right across the country who are voting on The Voice, and that may not be how they vote traditionally on political party lines.
We've had quite an interesting question here. Is Jess a feminist? One of our listeners has asked.
Well, I want to see women succeed at every opportunity, and you know, I'm a big supporter of seeing more women in leadership roles, particularly in the parliament, and I've done work in the Liberal Party and produced a report on that very issue. And I think we want to see, you know, of course, equal opportunity at every point. And you know, it's one of those things where someone asked me recently, you know, the fact that, you know, do you congratulate the new premier because, you know, she's a woman? It's great to see a woman in that role. And of course, we want to see more women in, whether it's politics or business or the community sector, in those leadership roles. And there's more we can do to support that.
But you wouldn't say yes or no, you're a feminist?
It's something I think in my generation that hasn't really been something that you have to think about. I suppose I just want to see women succeed and that they should have complete equality with everyone else.
Jess, can I just interject for 1 second? Sorry, I'm just going back to The Voice. I don't know if you saw yesterday, 71 academics from leading universities around Australia have actually put together a document because they're used to teaching people about politics and how the law is implemented, giving quite a detailed explanation of what's been published at The Voice. And I would just counter your argument to say there's not enough detail. They seem to think there's an awful lot of detail out there, and their letter goes into some detail to explain the implications of The Voice. So if anyone wants to read that, it's actually on the ABC website. You can see that now. So I think there's an awful lot of information about how The Voice would be implemented. I think people just need to explore and find it. So I'm not sure that we can say there's not enough information.
I think the point is, how does the government make sure that gets to people, though? How do they make sure that people can accessibility of that information? Not everyone is, you know, everyone's got a lot going on in their lives. So how do we make it really, really easy for them to access that?
Well, the internet's a wonderful thing. Most people have access today, and a lot of it's on there.
Yeah, and just for our listeners, the pre-record we were going to have on International Lesbian Day of Visibility, we might put that into the second hour, because our next guest is there. We're going to give you another couple of minutes, Jess. There you go. We like you.
We're going to leave those lesbians invisible.
That's right. Well, there's a lesbian here that's visible. So, but no, we'll play it in that. We'll play that segment in the second hour. Can I ask you, Jess, what is the worst part of being a member of parliament? Is it the hours? Is it the, you know, the social media claptrap and abuse? Is it the frustration? What's, you know, for you the part, perhaps not worst, but the part that you like the least?
I think the thing I find the most difficult is that you can't solve every problem that someone comes to you with. People will come to you with issues and you empathise with them, you want to solve the issue, but it's simply not within your power to do so. So I think that can be very difficult. And there are ways to get a sort of to deal with that, in that you can always represent that person. You can make sure they're heard. You can be their advocate, but you can't solve their issue there and then. I think that can be frustrating, and it can be difficult for both them and you not being able to do that very easily. There's, of course, the social media side. There's always, you know, negativity in politics. I think you come into that knowing it, and you've got to have thick skin and try and sort of block that negativity out. Most of the people who say things about you have never met you, and probably wouldn't say it to your face. I think that's another thing about social media, is people can say whatever they like on Twitter, but they would never say it to your face. And I've seen that in real life as well. So that's one aspect to it. But yeah, the most difficult thing is not being able to solve every single problem very, very quickly for someone when you really want to be able to.
Yeah. Madeline, any final reflections, questions?
We did just have another message come in that said, Dear Jess, it said, legislation comes after constitutional amendment, and the more detailed request is such a furphy. What do you think about that?
Well, I think we are asking Australians to vote on a change to our constitution, which is a big decision, and it should be a big decision. This is our governing document, and people have a right to ask for clear information about what that's going to look like. There were previous proposals to legislate the voice first, and then look at constitutional, or enshrining that in the constitution later. So I think it is fair for people to want to see the detail, and that doesn't mean that once they see the detail they're going to be swayed either way. It'll just make sure that they're as informed as possible to make their own decision.
Because we did see with, and it's not the same type of question, but we did see with marriage equality, there were a number of proposed bills or legislation that we saw before the postal survey.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be actually helpful. Yes, there is a lot of information out there. I think it would be helpful if the basis of the legislation that the government must have a draft I'd like to see that shared. Is there another email there, Madeline?
Another email. No? We've had a question. Jess, which leader do you admire outside of politics?
That's a very good question. So an outside politician. I have to say my...
We're not going to get you in factional trouble here.
Yeah. That would be a very difficult question. My previous boss at the Business Council, Jennifer Westacott, is someone I hold up to be a mentor, and someone who I think has an incredibly fierce intellect and capacity to work, and her ability to get across an issue and then articulate that and achieve an outcome is something I hope that I'll be able to learn from her, and someone who I always call for advice. So I think someone like Jennifer is someone I would hold up there as someone I aspire to be like.
Who's your... you're the Shadow Minister for Education and mm-hmm. Finance, Childhood Development, Regulation. Who's your...
Counterpart
on the other side.
So Ben Carroll has taken on the Deputy Premier, has taken mm-hmm. on Education this week, and Danny Pearson is the Assistant Treasurer, which is largely the Finance Minister.
Finance. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit of party room stuff?
Never.
A funny story in the party room? There's got to be a funny story, apart from, I believe James Newbury does some good impressions.
I can't think of anything too funny in the party room. There was a funny moment in the parliament.
Yeah.
So we have quite strict rules around what we can ask and when we can ask things and how we do it. So when you're asking a constituency question, for example, you have to ask for information, not for an answer or an action. And one of the government members stood up and point of order to the speaker about my constituency question and that it didn't meet the requirements. The speaker undertook to review it. She came back the next day and she reported back that not only had she reviewed my constituency question, but she had reviewed all of the constituency questions over the course of that week and proceeded to rule out a number of his colleagues' constituency questions. And I've never seen someone go so red so quickly with the embarrassment and the looks from his colleagues. So I think the sort of the fun and games of politics can be a little bit silly sometimes, and you know, you better just to get on with the job at hand.
Cool. We're out of time, Jess. Thank you for coming in. We look forward to having you back in the studio again. I'm Macca. Madeline Swain is my co-host. We've been speaking with Jess Wilson, the member for Q.
And the Sound of Music fan.
And the Sound of Music
number
fan.
Number one.
You'll have, next time you see Sally Von Kapp, you know.
I will.
See if you can break into a chorus.
I might send her a text.
With her, yeah. So thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it. I know how valuable Saturdays are, not just, you know, for being out and about in the electorate, but, you know, getting some personal time. So thank you. Thank you very much,
Macca.
Cheers. You are on SatMag, Joy 94.9. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.